From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, hidden history and archaeology, but what a story. Here's what's happening. What a gruesome story in Ohio. Listen to this. A badly beaten body found hanging from a tree was initially thought by locals to be simply a gruesome Halloween decoration. Oh my gosh. Construction workers in Chillicothe, Ohio, thought that a woman's body hanging from a chain link fence, and they realized, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. They called police. The body was so badly beaten, it was difficult to tell whether it was a male or female. There has been an arrest now. A person has been charged with the death of the woman. Can you believe that? People thought it was a Halloween decoration. It was the body of a woman. President Barack Obama has confirmed plans to extend the U.S. military presence in Afghanistan beyond 2016 in a shift in policy. Speaking at the White House, he said the U.S. would keep 5,500 troops in the country when he leaves office in 2017. It is, without a question, our longest war. Originally, all but a small embassy-based force were due to be in there by the end of the year. But the U.S. military says more troops will be needed to help Afghan forces counter a growing Taliban threat. Quite frankly, the Afghanistan army can't do the job at all. But should we be there? Craig Hewlett, of course, was just on with me, but I thought we'd bring him back to get a reaction on this story. Craig, this is kind of upsetting.
Well, it's interesting that the whole world is ready to stand up and say Russia is going into Syria and it's going to be Russia's quagmire. I've been arguing for a long time, we never should have gone into Afghanistan, we never should have gone into Iraq, we shouldn't have gone into Libya, we should stay the hell out of Yemen, Somalia. We have nothing but quagmire surrounding this nation, and I think Obama's made the decision that any president would make, given the fact that Iran, after the treaty with Iran, the agreement on the nuclear weapons capability, the lifting of sanctions, immediately started sending troops to Syria to back the Russian troops and began negotiating a pipeline through Iran up through Turkey.
Now, in this particular case, 5,500 troops, they're not going to be able to fight insurgents that keep coming into that country, are they?
No, and the Afghan forces will never be able to fight the Taliban and win because too many of them will defect.
That's right.
The problem isn't Afghanistan, and it's not the people, it's not fighting terrorism. And when Jeb Bush takes the White House, or God help us, Hillary Clinton were to win, what do you think's going to happen? They're going to deploy more troops. Mm-hmm. They'll enlarge the forces, because that quagmire isn't really a quagmire. It's a place we need to be in the thinking of the empire. The regime thinks they need to be there to protect pipelines, raw materials, gold, silver, oil. Everything you can think of. It's a nation rich in raw materials. So don't get deluded that this is about fighting terrorism. It never was.
You are so spot on, Mr. Hewlett. Thank you so much. There will be no benefit increase next year for millions of Social Security recipients, disabled veterans, and federal retirees, according to the government. It's just the third time in 40 years that payments will remain flat. But all three times have come since 2010. Not good news for folks that need a little extra money. Bad reactions to some dietary supplements are sending tens of thousands of Americans to the ER room every year, according to a new study. More than 23,000 visits to emergency rooms occur annually due to complications from taking dietary supplements such as herbal or other nutritional products, vitamins, and minerals. Look, my recommendation, be very careful of the company that is making these products. If they come from overseas or China, be very, very wary. Well, it's a life story that began together 83 years ago, and it came to an end on the exact same day. Identical twins, Helen May Cook and Clara Mae Mitchell, passed away within 12 hours of one another on October 13th. Ever since the day they were born, the twins shared a special bond. What an amazing story. And listen to this one. an identical twin, slated to be delivered 4 months after their brother was born in a rare birth. The brother was born, his name was Link, was born weighing only 1 pound, 2 ounces at 23 weeks. Actually, he's doing okay. His heart and his lung problems are there, but he's doing okay. Well, the other baby will be born at the appropriate time, but it's amazing that the mother is expecting her next child in January, the twin, when the other one was born months before that. Smartphones, laptops could do more damage to your skin than the sun, according to researchers. Listen to this one. The blue light emitted from your TV, computer, and phone is called high-energy visible light, HEV. It is dangerous, if not more, than sun damage. Research on the specific effects of HEV still developing, but scientists have said the light penetrates skin more deeply than the sun's UV rays. I did not know that. Yahoo's next step in password security is simply to eliminate them altogether. The company has announced that users of Yahoo Mail apps on both the iOS system and Android will have access to a new service called Yahoo Account Key, which uses smartphones to verify identities in lieu of traditional passwords. Now, that story that we've had, oh my gosh, talking about this structure that is 1,480 light years away, that it could be artificial outside of its star as an energy boosting machine is catching the media by storm right now. But I want to check in with our astronomer Stephen Cates to, one, get his view on this strange story and see what else is going on in the sky.
Well, George, the story you're talking about is quite incredible here. Something in astronomy that astronomers have known for some time now, maybe the last decade or so, is something called gravitational lensing, and Einstein predicted this, that as we get close to gravity sources, light can be warped or bent in space, and you can get multiple images of what, let's say, if you held a candle, you would see many. So this discovery or this revelation is quite interesting, needs much more research. But closer to home in the skies, this is a great opportunity as we now talk, George, about the sun, our nearest star, of course. The sun this week, a large coronal hole appears in the sun. Thus, for people who, of course, live in northern latitudes like Alaska and other places around the Earth, they're witnessing some of the most beautiful of the aurora borealis. The coronal holes simply let out so much of the solar wind and simply charge the upper atmosphere. But I've been doing something. I wanted to encourage the coast listeners that if you go out, you can actually see a planet in a pair of binoculars called Uranus. And this object lies high up in the sky as we talk now live, just below the stars, George, of the great square of the constellation of Pegasus. You'll have to look at a star chart. But interestingly enough, you see this bluish object in the field of view. Get a load of this, about 1.75 billion miles from your eye. This object, discovered back in 1781 by William Herschel, is really one of the more modern planets that are out there that people can see beyond that of the ancient Saturn. But what's interesting, George, it takes the light some 2.5 hours just to get that from, say, from the Earth to the planet and back, another 2.5 hours. Amazing stuff. As we close, don't forget, George, the great conjunction. If you look into the morning sky, you'll see the beautiful objects together. You'll see Jupiter and Mars. And then as we go down the line, you'll get to see later this month, Venus and the planet Jupiter, George. Spectacular stuff. Mercury makes a conjunction with all these planets. Much more coming, and a great meteor shower next week, the Orionid. So we're packed with information.
I love it. We'll be talking to you again, Steve. Thanks, my friend. More than 40 years ago, radioactive waste was dumped at a Westlake landfill in Bridgeton, Missouri, near St. Louis. More than 40 years ago. But something is happening. There's a fire burning in Bridgeton, Missouri. It's invisible to area residents. It's underground. It's been smoldering for a long time. And it is getting very, very close to this radioactive waste dump. And that is very dangerous. In a moment, Scott Portzline joins us. We're going to talk with him about this story and just how dangerous it might be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. That story I was talking about there, Bridgeton, Missouri, has people up in arms. Now, the EPA is involved, of course, and they're going to hold meetings in the St. Louis area with a number of concerned citizens over this radioactive waste dump where a landfill is burning and getting very close to this waste dump. Scott Porzline, of course, has done more than 40,000 pages of research on the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster and meltdown. And with this knowledge, Scott has warned that the Fukushima plant was headed for an explosion and meltdown only 6 hours after that tsunami. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. You do great work, Scott. Good to have you here.
Thank you, George. I'm happy to be here.
This situation in St. Louis, where I'm going back in a couple days, has got a lot of people concerned. Can you explain exactly what we think is going on?
Yeah, and rightfully so. People are worried and paying attention. What's happened is this fire has been burning at the landfill for about 5 years. And previously, a corporation that dealt with some of these weapon-grade uranium products and the daughters, the radioactive daughters that decay from that, illegally dumped the materials, the waste products, on the surface of the ground, and then eventually they changed hands three times, the ownership and the licensing from the Atomic Energy Commission and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, until finally the Nuclear Regulatory Commission took it over because it became orphaned. And it was buried at this landfill, most of it. And what's happened is there's a fire that started from the normal decay of materials that were buried there from the landfill, you know, the type of municipal waste that you would have. And it caught on fire because of the methane that comes out
That's
of
right.
the decay.
And like you said, it's got this slow burning for 5 years. Most of it's underground. Can't they put it out?
No, there's no good way to do that. We had a fire here in Pennsylvania. In fact, it's still going on. It's a coal fire, so that's a little bit different with the fuel source. 53 years at Centralia, Pennsylvania.
My gosh.
And they did try to put a fire barrier up, but they didn't put up a sufficient one sufficient enough to stop this. So it's only about 3 football fields lengths away from this nuclear waste now. And if the fire were to get to the nuclear waste, it could send plumes of radioactivity into the St. Louis area. The landfill at Bridgeton is about 15 miles northwest of the city. And Ferguson, which was in the news last year,
That's right.
is 5 miles due east.
And it's right by the airport as well.
That's right. And they've already made measurements from some of the waste that was dumped near the airport years ago. And there's real reasons to be concerned. You know, they're going to have those meetings, like you said, but none of these assurances come with any guarantees because two things. No one knows what that fire is going to do. No one knows what the underground water is going to do. And no one knows for sure what's buried there. It's never been accounted for properly.
My gosh.
You know, it's a different world back in the 40s and 50s when the arms race was going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a lot of cheating with the accounting, the books for the leakages that were occurring and the losses that were
occurring. Where they dumped and how much they dumped.
Sure. And it wasn't even understood just how dangerous it was.
Well, St. Louis played an integral role in the development of the atomic bomb during the World War II era, so God knows what's down there, Scott.
Oh, that's right. Well, we had the same problem here at Apollo PA, where they were working with plutonium and uranium, and they used to cheat on the books there. So, in other words, there was a leakage within the facility when they processed the plutonium, and it would leak out into the environment. And so they were allowed to leak just a small amount each day. And when they found out they were losing a lot more than that, they would borrow from the future allowance until finally, after the years added up, it no longer became reconcilable. And it ended up causing the FBI to investigate whether somebody had stolen plutonium or diverted plutonium. And some people thought it was diverted to Israel to make their nuclear weapons. That all came out from the Glenn Seaborg journals. He's the one who
Right.
helped discover plutonium.
I've been getting emails from a lot of people in St. Louis concerned about this, Scott, as they should be. But, you know, these dumps could be all over the country. Now, what happens if the fire truly reaches this nuclear waste dump?
Well, it will start to disperse the radioactive content of the dump. And so what we have inside, what we do know in the radioactive content inside that dump, and it's illegal, so it's certainly not organized, and there's no containers, and there's no engineered barriers to contain that, is thorium and radium, uranium, actinium, and proactinium. Now, the big concern is the thorium-230. And the reason that's so concerning is it's 60,000 times more radioactive than uranium. And it's classified as hazardous as plutonium if you were to ingest it.
Is this like a dirty bomb?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the most dangerous radioisotopes that you could have.
Oh, my, unbelievable.
The cesium and iridium-192 and cobalt are the ones. Do you remember the movie, the fictional movie, Dr. Strangelove?
I sure do. A classic.
And they had a doomsday, supposedly the Soviet Union had a doomsday weapon, and it was made out of the fictional material cobalt thorium G. So there's your thorium, and there's your cobalt, too. But the thorium is the concern at St. Louis there.
Might they evacuate? Might they shut the airport down because it's so close?
I don't know what if they would, the airport. I think the chance of that happening is there. But St. Louis could definitely see an evacuation if things got really bad. There's even the potential for the groundwater to be contaminated with radiation to the point where they could no longer use their normal source of water intake for the city. This is a very, very serious situation if it gets that far. I'm not saying it's going to, but the potential is there, and people are rightfully very, very concerned. They're going to try to get all the facts before they let people know what to expect.
Right.
They're not going to get all the facts because nobody knows the facts.
They don't know it. And what has taken them so long, Scott, to jump on this story as a government? I mean, they should have been working on this a couple years ago.
I don't think people recognize what can happen with the underground fires. I don't know how much that occurs across the United States, but I'm familiar with it because of the fire we had here at Centralia, Pennsylvania. And then it probably wasn't until somebody put two and two together and realized, wait a minute, there's some radioactive material nearby. Maybe that will be in jeopardy. So the problem with it going so long really has to do with a wishful thinking on behalf of the Environmental Protection Agency. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission concluded about 20 years ago that should be removed from that area because it could be transported through the groundwater, or that if a fire ever did develop, they'd be in this very situation. But the EPA just kept sitting on it and figured, let it go, don't stir it up, don't go to the expense, we'll be all right.
Yeah.
Well, here's where we sit.
Now we're getting close, absolutely. For years, we've been dumping nuclear waste all over the place. I mean, I remember during the Bush era, they were talking about using the Yucca Mountain area to dump more waste. What are they going to do with all this stuff?
No one knows yet. The industry objects to the term dump. They call it a repository or storage. But, you know,
a repository makes it sound like it's safe.
Well, of course, they try to think they can engineer something for 100,000 years that will be safe. No, you can't do it. In fact, the truth is there has never been a dump in the world, a nuclear dump in the world that hasn't leaked. From the low-level ones to the mid-level to the high levels, they have all leaked.
All right, Scott, what are we going to do about it? What will happen?
Well, I think what the real concern, you mean with the fire or with the waste?
Both.
Okay, let's talk about the fire. If that fire starts to get very close to the waste, the people in that area should pay attention.
They sure should.
Community activists.
They're getting concerned now, which is good.
Ought to get themselves some radiation detectors so that they don't have to rely upon the government or the EPA to notify them what's going on. Here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, because of the Three Mile Island accident, we have our own citizens' radiation monitoring network. So we don't need the government to tell us if we see an increase in the levels of radiation. Now, we do rely on some scientists at some local colleges to help interpret the data we get. Because you want to act responsibly. You don't want to alarm people unnecessarily. You don't want to trigger an evacuation or possibly even rioting when that type of thing happens.
Let's hold on, Scott. We're going to take this quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this. We'll also take phone calls. And if anybody lives in that area around Bridgeton, Missouri, check in with us as well. And welcome back to Coast, Scott Portzline with us. His website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll get to your calls. Getting lots of calls from the St. Louis area, Scott, so that'll be interesting. So we're talking about the fire and the waste dump, both of which are serious, but the radioactivity is the worst, no doubt, right?
Well, that's definitely true. There are some other problems there. There could be neurological damage from some of the solvents that are also mixed in with that waste, but nobody knows for sure how many different types of solvents are and how dangerous they are. And of course, what the public has to worry about as that fire gets closer is, do they need to take protective actions? And the government will start providing assurances, and it won't necessarily be timely. And then finally, there could be some releases of radiation. So there may be some warnings to go out to limit your time outdoors, or to shelter in place, or maybe not to eat any of the fruit or vegetation that it may still be available to the people in that area. And then eventually they would have to be evacuated if the levels got high enough, because they can't ingest or inhale these radioactive contaminants. The thorium is about 20 times more carcinogenic than an X-ray.
Jeez.
So in a short period of time, you would exceed the amount of X-rays you want to have in a lifetime. So it's a very serious situation. And by the way, this is no small matter in the amount of thorium that's there. This is potentially and probably the largest amount of thorium in one site in the world. It's definitely the highest in the United
States. Can it be cleaned up, Scott? Can it be, you know, because I remember being there. I was running a television station at the time, the Times Beach disaster, because of the Agent Orange that was dumped there along the road. And they literally shut that city down, moved everybody out permanently, and scraped it all off, and then they burned it. Not sure if that was smart, because it went up into the atmosphere, but that's what they did. I mean, can they dig out this radioactive waste?
Well, to some degree, they certainly can. But the longer they wait, the more it migrates through the groundwater. And, you know, it's in it's close to the Mississippi River, isn't that what's right nearby?
Oh, absolutely. It's where Anheuser-Busch gets its water.
Well, the river flooding levels definitely can affect the groundwater, and therefore no one really knows what to do. And see, that played a role in the EPA's decision as to whether to stir it up or not.
Well, we have seen results of Fukushima just in the past several years, where children in that area have a higher incidence of cancer, don't they?
Absolutely. In fact, just a few days ago, they said that an epidemiologist from a noted university in Japan found that there was a 30-fold increase in child thyroid cancers in Fukushima.
Oh.
And that's terrible, because these children will have to go through operations. They're going to end up with what the Ukrainians call the Chernobyl necklace. So they'll have a scar around their neck that looks like a necklace. And we're going to see the same thing happening in Fukushima.
All right, let's take some calls. And we're going to take a few calls here from the St. Louis area. As a matter of fact, Julie is in St. Anne, and that's right there. Julie, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, George, and thanks for letting me talk.
Sure thing.
I just found out about this radioactive waste recently, but I heard for decades that it was around here. And I think they're still burying stuff, because in the 80s, there was a petition going around to stop them from burying it around the airport. A lot of people signed that petition that stayed here and lived here. Some people didn't want to see that petition. They thought it was a bunch of garbage. And, you know, they
literally
a lot of them moved out to Weldon Springs. Well, they ended up moving that waste out to Weldon Springs.
Yeah, it followed them there, didn't it?
It followed them. And at this point, you know, some people are saying, what can we do about it? You know, there's nothing a human being, any kind of man-made institute, can do anything about fixing this problem.
Well,
I mean,
That's partially correct because, you know, we borrow the Earth from future generations. It's on loan to us for the time being. And what we pass down to them is the price they're going to be paying that we used them, their future. And what can we do about it? Well, the citizens have got to make enough noise that demand the government make some changes. And they will be able to clean up to some degree, but who knows what we'll find once they start.
Well, what has been a local concern story, hopefully after tonight, Scott, will become a national concern story, and we can get some quick action out there.
Yeah, I hope so, because this is a big deal.
Let's go to Derek in St. Louis now. Hey, Derek, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Well, I grew up in St. Ann as well, went to Pattonville High School in Bridgeton, which is right next to the landfill. But we actually used to go to the park right there that has a lake. That's where we'd all go cruise. And the park ranger, they had signs up all around that lake: do not go in the water, do not fish, do not eat the fish in the water.
Jeez.
That lake was contaminated my whole life.
Did they tell you what type of contamination?
No, we never did really ask. We didn't think much. You wouldn't think, I mean, there was something bad, we thought, but never did look into it. We were kids. We were just looking to go cruising and all that. But they were very aware of it, and they wanted to make sure that we didn't go anywhere near the water. It's right next to the landfill. It's the only lake right there.
It's got to be related somehow, don't you think, Scott?
Oh, probably so. But do you and your friends talk about the illnesses or notice any types of cancers?
I don't know about cancer, but I did actually, when I was a teenager, I was actually hospitalized for a couple months. They don't know what it was, but I couldn't walk. I lost all my weight. I was actually in the hospital for over 2 months when I was a teenager.
Do you have any problem with your liver? That's where the thorium goes to the,
no, I'm healthy.
To the liver.
No, I'm healthy now. No problems now.
Well, good.
Okay, thanks, Derek. Appreciate that. Let's go to Carrie in San Diego, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my
call.
Sure
thing, Carrie.
I have a question. Is there a timeline? I mean, do they give an estimate of how long this thing is going to take to reach the dump? I mean, is it just kind of up in the air, or is there some way to tell how long people have to get out of Dodge?
Yeah, it's up in the air. I imagine once you get within 100 yards, it's really pay attention every day to what's going on. And again, I would get some citizens group to monitor the radiation independently so that you don't have a time delay, because that's the first thing that happens. Oh, we can't panic the people. We can't rush to judgment. We can't rush to action. So let's think about this for another 24 hours. Well, then some more information comes in, and they think, well, now it's even more complicated before, and you don't necessarily get timely information.
Man, I don't know, Scott. This is I'm just glad you're here with us as we talk about this. I'm not going to let this go. You know, I'm after the power grid, getting it insulated against either an EMP attack or an X-flare from the sun. This is just as bad. My grandchildren are all out there.
Yeah, and it's going to repeat itself around the world, too. Because, like you said, this has happened all over the place. We have radioactive waste in the Kiana Forest here in central Pennsylvania, or up near State College, I should say. And there's probably other sites we don't even know about that citizens can call in and tell us about, and I may have never even heard of it. You know, I attended a training session with the Department of Energy on these nuclear waste shipments that are going to possibly be starting in a few years, and their strategy for responders to an accident involving one of these spent fuel trucks that coming from the nuclear power plants, their strategy was to dump sand and stand back or run and wait until the Department of Energy gets there. So, you know, what's really frightening is we're going to start moving to high-level waste from our nuclear plants within a few years if the Congress and Department of Energy allow it to happen. And the casks themselves are a travesty because they're not rated to the specifications that really need to happen. For instance, I'll give you two of them. They can withstand a 1,400 degree Fahrenheit fire for 30 minutes. Well, the fire that occurred in Baltimore a few years back in a underpass or a tunnel lasted for 3 days. And they're also, these casks are also designed to stand a crash of about 30 miles per hour or a 30-foot drop Well, some of these overpasses, I live real close to one, they're about 80 feet in the air. And we don't have proper rules in place even on when you can ship these casks. So I personally witnessed a high-level waste from military reactors like a submarine or an aircraft carrier going north of Harrisburg, 8 miles north of Harrisburg, at 45 miles per hour on a rail car. No other cars were on the train other than for spacers. You know, they put a couple empty cars, flatbeds in between it because they don't want the engineers to be exposed to these casks. They're always emitting radiation. They don't shield it entirely. And it was going 45 miles an hour on a 95-degree day, the third one in a row, and just the previous day in Washington, D.C., there was a derailment.
Yeah.
Now, there's no regulation saying they can't transport a cask on a rail when the rails are warping at those higher temperatures.
Without the landfill fire, would it be as serious as it seems to be right now?
No. Eventually, yes, but right now, no.
There wouldn't be that immediate danger.
That's correct.
Let's go to St. Charles County in Missouri. Now, that's right in the area. That's the county over from St. Louis County. Chet is with us east of the Rockies. Hi, Chet. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Thank you very, very much for bringing this to the attention. I'm within about 3 miles, 4 miles as the crow flies.
Oh, boy.
And this is not a matter of when, if it's going to be when. I don't know how long a football field is, but if it's that close, you know, I remember when that was an active dump over there. And I think Mellenkraut's the one you need to blame this on. I think Mellenkraut. Weldon Spring is, all the springs are contaminated out there, but I'd like to know, what do we do if we need to get out of here quick?
Well, you need to have a plan in advance like you're asking about. So
would this be a FEMA plan, Scott?
Well, there are FEMA plans, but there's troubles with those types of plans. And FEMA doesn't like me saying this, but if you were to evacuate in the direction of the wind, then you're staying in the plume rather than getting away from it. So you need to be aware of what your planned evacuation routes are, and you probably want to have some sort of mask to help you not ingest quite as much of the particulate matter. You will still get a dose of radiation if you're in the plume, but listen mostly to what the authorities tell you and when, and get some independent monitoring going.
Man, this is unbelievable. Truly unbelievable.
Well, hopefully nothing will happen. I don't know what to make of it, though.
They need to do one of two things, or both things. One, they need to stop this fire somehow that's burning underground.
I can't see why they're sitting back on that and not really going after it like it's a national security issue that it is.
Right.
Can you imagine the billions of dollars they might have to spend if they don't stop that fire?
Maybe the workers, the firemen, whomever, maybe they don't want to go there.
Well, I'm sure the engineering involved with it would be pretty tough. And I'm sure they could find workers who would do it. There's always people willing to earn the big bucks to face a risk that they don't really believe in.
That's a populated area, too. I don't see how you could evacuate so many people.
Oh, it's dense, definitely. Very dense.
Let's go to Snowflake, Arizona now. Lee is with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Lee. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for having such an intelligent, informed guest. Your guest is correct about fire being a very effective dispersal of radiation. The EPA has a long history of turning a blind eye to this problem. Every time Chernobyl catches on fire, we worry. But what Americans have failed to realize is that our above-ground testing in Nevada spread radioactive waste effectively across the Southwest, including plutonium. Now the Forest Service has complicated the issue by deciding to reintroduce fire into our western forests, which will redisperse the stored radiation instead of changing outdated timber export laws. So here's just another example about how one arm of the government is completely unaware of what the other is doing and doesn't really care.
Well, I agree with everything you said up until the end. They know what the other one's doing, and they don't care.
Yeah, they do. I kind of feel like my Nighthawk days in St. Louis, Scott, when I was doing my show there, so many St. Louisans calling in on this unbelievable story. They're depressed enough that the Cardinals didn't make it to the next round in the playoffs.
Huh.
So this is a double whammy for
them. Yeah. Well, you could be Chicago. And we were just talking about Chicago earlier tonight on a teleconference I was on regarding the shipment of high-level waste. Chicago is going to be like a central hub if these wastes start being shipped on our highways and on our railways and even on our waterways. And so you could be a Cubs fan and face thousands of shipments coming to your town. they got a worrisome future.
Here's a little 16-year-old talking to a sophomore at Pattonville High School, which is, you know, right near that landfill. He says, I'm 16, and I'm already worried about my future. Now, that's sad for a youngster to have to say that.
That's exactly right.
My gosh. Scott, people who want more information on what you do and some of the things that you've done, where do they find you?
I'm at Three Mile Island Alert, and our website is www.tmia.com. We have a com address instead of an org address. I want to tell you that within the end of the month, there's going to be a grassroots movement by citizens in the United States to make people aware of these upcoming shipments of the high-level waste. And I think the campaign is going to be called Stop Fukushima Freeways. So watch for that, and I have some great guests lined up for you on that if you'd care to have them.
Absolutely, Scott. You keep in touch with us.
We'll do then.
We've got time for maybe, we probably don't have time for any more calls. They just keep rolling in, but it is a serious, serious problem. Now, Scott, people are going to panic if they don't know what to do. That's not the right thing to do, is it?
No. So you plan ahead, you do a little research, you talk to your local authorities and the federal authorities, you get some independent monitoring, and you have an action in place. You should have a go bag. That's something Homeland Security told us a long time ago. Have a bag by your door or in your car. Have some spare medications to take with you in case you had to leave in a sudden hurry. I personally don't think it'll be so urgent that you got to go right now unless they delay the decision. And then here's another thing that happened here at Three Mile Island. While the nuclear regulatory commissioners were meeting in Washington, D.C., the radiation plume had already gone over the portion of the population that they wanted to evacuate. And so now they decided, we waited too long to tell them to go. Now we'll send them out into it and let them stay there.
And the problem is you just don't know when it's going to affect people's health. It could be 2 years. It could be 10 years. But it probably will happen. Scott, thank you so much. That's a story we're going to stay on. Residents there in Bridgeton, a suburb of St. Louis, are getting hit with a double whammy of an underground fire near a landfill that's making its way to a radioactive waste dump. I'll be back in a moment as we talk about hidden history and archaeology on Coast to Coast AM.